So you might wonder why PhD in museum studies. It's really not as far out there as it may appear. I am actually just taking what I do now and inputting it into an industry of my passion. So doing a lot of the marketing and big data work and writing my dissertation all around how museums should be using data to better understand their visitors so that the collections, their content reflects what the community wants. And it really flows very nicely into what I do on an everyday basis. At Aetna, I came into the nickname of Mad Hatter several South by Southwests ago, probably amongst one of the many parties, because I would wear a different hat to a different conference. And a person joked with me, you know, you understand why people were called Mad Hatters. You know, they were sniffing the glue all day, et cetera. And I was like, that really does explain what I do all day. You have to have a certain resilience, especially in a very large brand where there is a lot of discrepancy between marketing and communications, between what the regions want to do versus what your national or global brand footprint looks like. And you have to do a very big, you know, balancing act on a day-to-day basis, minute-by-minute basis, for how your online presence is going to be perceived, and you have to think and plan accordingly. And content is only a very, very small, small sliver of it. And I know that today's talk, you know, was titled as, you know, talking about credibility, and I'm not gonna give you like any 10 tips or tricks. What I'm gonna tell you is the unsexy part of what made or is making our content credible, and that there's no one-size-fits-all solution, and there's no quick-hit solution, and this is an ongoing target for us. One day, we can be the darlings in media, which is very rare and few and far between in the healthcare world where there's not a lot of warm and fuzzies, and in some instances, we're not. But to the everyday prospect or member that services our brand, we have got to remain stable. We have to be consistent in our tone and inner voice. So I just want to give you just a very quick background before I talk to you about how we are building the stability within our online community. So first off, we had absolutely no social presence, not a consistent social presence, until about 4 years ago. We had rogue or I wouldn't even say they're rogue because there wasn't anything in place to say that they were rogue. We had disparate channels across all of the social networks. And what we needed to do is we needed to kind of corral them, better understand them, put some foundation in place for governance so that we could continue to grow and scale, or better understand what scale would look like. So we divided social into three different categories. The first and foremost was the low-hanging fruit. Those were those already existing channels like the Twitter, Facebook, YouTubes, LinkedIn's of the world, those that were very well known, open, etc. And then there was social business. So how do we take the internal online communities or tools that help make social more understandable, more comfortable, more familiar, and how do we bring them in to our 45,000 employees so that as we're talking about all of this stuff externally, we can build up the skills, this presence, this understanding within the business. It's still social. It still impacts, especially if we want to talk about employee advocacy, so we were planning for the future, but it required its own bucket. You'll notice I talk about buckets and pillars a lot. I'm a little anal. I like my organization of things. There are, you know, there will be overlap and things do get messy, but when I can organize, I try to do so. And then the third were all of these open, either open communities or closed exclusive communities that we had either partnered or worked with affiliates to create or somehow had some very loose connection with. These are like the alcohol awareness groups, the diabetes groups. They were very, very protective about who got in, who participated, and even if we had a hand in pulling this community together, it's not exactly like you want your health insurance company to be talking to you while you're having intimate conversations about your diabetes management or care. So there are different levels of how we could play in each of these spaces. And we had to determine what our foundational components were going to be and how we played in this space. This was before you could even think about what type of content, what type of paid and organic type of engagement would we want to either create or have in return. So we started to build, and I'll walk through very quickly some of the foundational components. But 2014, last year, was a focus on taking what had been done the very first 2 years and validating what had been created. So it's one thing, and some of you might have been part of good, really great skunk work operations in your company, or some that weren't quite successful and you just moved on to another area of the company or another company in general. We were kind of left to our own devices the first couple of years. Nobody really thought much of us. Nobody expected anything of us. And, you know, we had in 2 years kind of amassed this overarching set of governance and resources that we now needed to have some teeth behind, because things were starting to happen and we were actually starting to have to enforce the governance. And we went through the, and I wouldn't recommend this, but having an internal audit, as painful as it was, the blood, sweat, and tears that go into it, is what solidified, what really validated everything that we had put into place. Yes, it called into question some of the things that we had not been prepared to address yet, or that we had kind of put a pile of leaves over that hole right there, so you don't see that. But it really did wonders in order to be able to have the entire company recognize that this group, it wasn't just Lauren saying, no, I'm sorry, you can't have that Twitter handle. Yeah, sorry, that's not gonna happen. Lauren's telling me I can't have it. No, Aetna's telling you that you cannot have this channel for XYZ, of course, right? So it wasn't a personal, conversation. We were talking about what was best for the company, what was best for the end member or consumer. 2014, that was the focus. How do we solidify, validate all of these foundational components? While we were doing that, we've been designing, building, and flying the plane all at the same time at Aetna. And we knew that it was very important not only to get the buy-in or the validation of what this structure is and what it could become, but also we needed to get everyone educated, everyone informed. And there's no one-size-fits-all training as well. So we created a white belt, green belt, black belt training enterprise toolkit. And what it did was white belt addressed who we are and why we are in social. So it was like taking this slide and this like well-versed elevator pitch and taking it to across the company so that they knew that their company was on social, this is how they were addressing it. And by the way, if they wanted to enter into social, this is how they needed to disclose who they were, not telling them, dictating how they could or should not be in the space, but how they could be so in a safe environment, know exactly what they were getting into, or getting their friends and family into. And then the green belt was for all of those who had community management responsibilities or a communication spokesperson. And black belt was for those specifically who owned various different channels, had a strategic investment, and for the executives of the company. And so green belt, white belt, very on demand, whereas black belt was instructor led. And so we created all of that training last year. In 2015, this year, was about making it mandatory and putting into place the areas where black belt and green belt were accessible for all of those who needed to have that additional layer or layers of information. So here are just some of the things that I've already talked about. We had to start building this structure, and we knew that this scaffolding was going to have to evolve over time. Nothing that we set 4 years ago is the same today. And that has been on purpose. And it has because you know, we've had different crisis, you know, issues that we've had to address. We've had different employee issues. We had to build in that flexibility, though. So it's not necessarily that it was built into any specific verbiage within the documents themselves, but we have representatives from across the entire company that come together every single quarter to review every single one of these governance documents. They go through and we look at what's changed externally. Has the FTC made any, you know, additional changes? Have they called somebody else out? Have they brought a new case study to light? What do we need to know? Internally, from an HR perspective, you know, how are you coaching our folks to become advocates of our brand? Did you not understand the disclosure piece? Here, let's go over that again. How do we continue to flesh that out so it's not so intimidating or it's more welcoming? So we have these constant conversations on a quarterly basis. And then at the end of each year, usually starts 1 November, so we're about there for my group, it becomes the busiest time of the year because we audit. I hate that word too. Maybe I should just say we evaluate. We evaluate our entire online presence. So we look at all of the Twitter handles, the Facebook pages, the LinkedIn groups, anything that is Aetna affiliated, not just core corporate channels, but everything overall. We reach out to those people that were identified as the community managers or those people that own that particular channel, group, that community, because we want to ensure that that consistency of tone and voice and community management is consistent across the board. Now, I'm not saying that your experience in one community is going to be exactly the same as another. It's all about context and also who's facilitating those conversations. But we want to make sure that you are getting a level of service that is compliant with the overall Aetna brand. So that evaluation is crucial. We started out with almost 300 social sites 4 years ago. We are now down to under 65. And those 62 actually, they have a reason, they have a purpose. And I can say when somebody comes to our group and says, we want XYZ channel, I can say, you know what, this channel does your job for you. Did you know it existed? Or do you have community management to be able to answer questions 24/7? Are you able to handle something on the weekends? Are you the only person responsible? Do you have content that you can consistently feed the beast for this particular channel? Oh, you're telling me that you can only feed it once every 3 months and maybe look at it on the fly every couple of weeks? Not gonna happen. Especially, even more so, as we enter, which healthcare is not exactly, as I said before, it doesn't give you the warm and fuzzies all the way around, okay? It's not an easy, and my coworker back here can attest to that, I hate to point her out. It's not the easiest space to work in. And so we're entering what's already a volatile environment. And what is happening over the next year? US folks, election period, what is one of the top topics? Healthcare, right? Okay. What we address with every single day, it's not going away. And we have to create safe havens, these spaces to play in. And so if somebody comes to us and wants to create a new community, they need to know, they may have the most wonderful idea for that space. The best, nice, fluffiest topic and content anybody could ever see. And it's not gonna offend or harm anyone. Somebody's gonna find it, they're gonna go in there and they're gonna say, why aren't you doing XYZ? And they're gonna take over your community. What do you do then? You come to us and you ask us to clean it up. We want to prevent that type of thing from happening, or for anybody in those other communities from being badgered. Yes, those conversations are going to happen. Yes, we need to respond. There are times and places when we can and cannot respond. But we have those mapped out, and we continue to map out different scenarios as we come to learn what they are and to listen and to try to be as empathetic as possible. But we can't do so if we're just constantly diluting our core corporate social presence. Now, one of the things that kind of kept me in community that was a revelation for me 2 years ago is I was on my way out. I was like, there's no way. It wasn't Aetna. But it was like this community space as a whole. Right now, it's really hot to be a content manager. 2 years ago, it was very hot to be a community manager. Everybody wanted to be a community manager. I'd been a community manager since before it was called community management. And, you know, I was kind of done. I was like, I don't sit in my PJs all day long and tweet and Facebook. And this is like the perception of what people think I do all day long. It's like, you know, I think it's time for me to move on. It's time for me to think about something different. And I came across this book. It is a very dense book. I don't recommend, if you want to read the book, more power to you. But Jane Jacobs, the Death and Life of Great American Cities. And she talks all about the urban planning principles around how communities were created and all of the problems in the 70s of how these big concrete jungles had sprung up and were sprawling outward and we'd lost that sense of what it meant to be shoulder to shoulder with somebody, to have a conversation, to be able to share things. What she wrote in that book resonated with me. I was like, we are the builders of these communities online. We are building online cities. Aetna.com, it is a massive city. There are hundreds and thousands of different places that you can go onto our .com site. We've got so many different plans and services. And yet, the more that we add to that, the more we're acting like this city that's sprawling, you know, we're pushing people out to the suburbs. Hey, if you can find a chance in the next month, come on back our way, you know? Rather than how do we find a way to bring everybody to the table, to get them closer together, to start to plan our community and our content around denser living spaces, environments in which we can talk, environments which we can share things. True, going back to the roots of what community is and was meant to be. But couldn't even have gotten there or even started to suggest what that type of thinking could do if we didn't have the scaffolding already in place. So just as I was having this wonderful aha moment, oh my gosh, I think I'm gonna stay in community, Gartner, 2 years ago, published their digital transit map. And it listed every single internal and external touch point of what would support an ideal marketing department. And I was like, oh my gosh, this fits so just really great into my urban planning thinking. This is perfect. But yet, as I started, and it's hard to see in this picture, so I've got the link to it when we share the slides. But as I started to look closely into this map, I noticed a fundamental flaw. It's a flaw that we have in our own cities. They're starting to change now. That we purposely built into our cities, in which we also purposely built into our online spaces or communities, is we organized everything by function. Our community members do not care if you sit in operations versus marketing versus sales. When they have a question, they want somebody to answer it. They want to get the right information at the right time, and they would like to avoid going hundreds of different places just to get that information. And the way that this map was set up was wonderful in that it laid out everything that an ideal marketing-led organization would have, but it was still how you got there, and everything was still bunched together. So I took every single point on this map, and I put it into a spreadsheet. And I went back and I went through all of the things that Aetna owned and I said, okay, what do we have? What do we not have? What could symbolize as a gap, an opportunity? And then how can I restructure these points on the map and build our own neighborhoods and clusters to reflect an online city, an online community for the Aetna prospect or member? It was the first step we did in starting to think about social and ultimately content differently. So we started to establish zones. And this is something that is still taking place today because it is a very large process. You have to think first that your online presence, encompassing of social as well, is part of this digital city. It's this digital footprint. It is nodes within nodes within nodes, you know, that are attached across multiple networks. And what's interesting here is that you have to think, you have to kind of unshear all of the various layers. You have to think of yourself for your community first, that layer, the community of the online, the greater online presence, the presence of where you are in the industry, and how all of these things are starting to map together and how that influences the way that you organize, the way that you build your social properties, what you house on your content, and what ultimately makes it to your .com sites that are, you know, is maybe more permanent, less dynamic, and less conversational. So you want to start, bless you, you want to start to build and kind of organize your own city structure. You want to pull things together, you want to make it closer so that a person can go from point A to point D without having to go through B and C first. And it should be made walkable. I know that's kind of hard to kind of put your mind in thinking about how do you create a walkable city online. Your social media sites, channels, networks, the content that you're creating with organic and paid on all of these various different sites, those are connectors. That is what is making your online presence more walkable. You are making it useful, interesting, safe for somebody to get to the right information at the right time. So you need to start thinking about social as either these green spaces or your parks, your recreation, the place that you have everybody go, you know, to ask common questions, to take a second just to breathe, relax before they move on to the next part of their destination. Or you use your content as crosswalks between different sections of your online presence. So you've got this thinking, as I said, unshearing kind of the different layers or the networks. So you've got like this broad industry, then the city complex, the community, and then ultimately these different pillars of content that are supporting your community. So some parts of your house, your community, right? Your social network, whatever you want to call it. Some of it is disposable, okay? This is the stuff that is going to fill for a specific need, time, purpose. Comes, it goes. This stuff, this also comes and goes, the tables, the chairs. This gets swapped out for this type of conference versus if we were all sitting around having a luncheon, okay? So that all gets swapped out. These types of items are thought about last. Yet so often, what is driving everybody's kind of knee-jerk tendencies right now in the marketing and communication space is content. Content this, content that, has no shelf life, it's up there on Twitter one day, it's gone 2 seconds later, it's on Facebook, oh great, you put it on Tumblr, oh wonderful, it's part of a pin, where does it go from there? I don't know. And you're putting all of this disposable items on, and you have no idea in what scaffolding or structure it exists, or why it exists, or how long it is supposed to exist. You're putting that content first versus building the structure around it so that you can choose the most appropriate setting. So the stuff in the middle, which is hard to kind of see here, this is from the How Buildings Learn. The stuff in the middle, that's our social, that's our content. This stuff comes last. What we have to think of first is our foundation. Where are we putting and driving all of our social assets, our communities? Are they out there on their own? Do we redirect from any of our permanent sites or collections? I know this may sound like really like very common sense stuff and things we should have already thought about, but talk about urban sprawl. You probably have thousands and thousands of microsites. Are they all consistent? Do they all lead back to these various different channels? Are they grouped in the same space? Do they have the, you know, consistent tone and voice? Then we need to look at what the structure is itself. That's the governance. That's all the stuff that I told you we took 2 years to put together that ultimately, you know, came to fruition with the audit and the training. And thinking through, okay, what did we want? How are we going to build on this foundation? What was going to make it successful so that if we have a, you know, if we have Twitter 1 year, that we can eventually phase in Instagram or Pinterest at another station in time, or phase out when appropriate. Also, the skin. It's the flash, the aesthetics, right? The architect or designer comes in, they put together this really awesome community, looks beautiful, the UI looks great. It works for about the first week, and then it doesn't, but then you can't find the designer or the architect anymore. Anybody been through that? Right, yeah, and the community manager gets stuck, or we find the intern to come fix the problem. Yeah, I think we've all been there. So we focus a lot on what it aesthetically looks like and is pleasing, and I'm not saying that that's not important, but it's one of many layers that contribute to the overall meaning of what we're building. So whether it's the UI we're talking about, or as you know, the pretty, you know, piece of Facebook content that you're putting together, you can't think about the flash without the substance. So don't build the content first. You have to start outside in. And you can't forget about the services, right? Who's going to look after that content that you're building? Who's going to be able to answer the questions? Anything that funnels through our content pipeline right now, I have to ensure, whether it's paid or organic, because even if it's paid and we have, you know, the right targeting, bless you, and we know exactly who it's going to go out there, it's, you know, right-hand rail, maybe it doesn't, you know, doesn't have a response factor, it's still going to, there's still that ripple effect. It's online, so anything is permeable, right? So if we have something that's going out there about open enrollment, and we have a question that comes through, who's going to answer it? If they've got a problem with the ad, who do I know to go out there and be able to answer or give more context to any of this? Every single piece of content that you build or that you put out there has got to be able to feed the larger context, the larger understanding for the community. And you don't want to do a bunch of one-offs. You want to be able to have a consistent tone and voice across all of your social efforts. So by building this house, building this structure, understanding how these different structures are grouped together will help you be more prepared to create more valuable content and valuable engagement with your communities. So this goes back into the walkability. I usually do an entire section around how to make it walkable, and what are some of the factors that really assist in making an environment more safe. And that's usually more community management driven. But really, you know, it's not the community management, the community manager in and of herself. It really is how they interact or how they have content as their supporting resource, and wherever you can lead a digital breadcrumb trail for folks to help them navigate or self-service is always an aid to the community manager. So during this process in which we started to think about this digital expanse, this city thinking, urban planning principles that could be applied into the online world, it put social and content, not on a back burner, but as one, you know, as one or two of the very last things that were thought of, and that there were a whole lot of things that we had to get right and a whole lot of other conversations that had to occur, and that it would change the structure of our social spaces fundamentally. So our community members have taken our social networks and they've made them what they are today. Facebook is a service, despite our attempts of, you know, trying to make it into a thought leadership or something other than what it is. It is a service channel. That's what people go for, you know, go where they go in social to ask questions. We can't make it anything else. That is what they want, that is what they expect. But we need to offer safe environments where we have these open communities, start to think more strategically about where the smaller, the niche, exclusive, those social health communities exist, because they don't belong in these open spaces. These open spaces need to be safe havens in which people can feel free to air the good, the bad, and the ugly without any of their personal identifiable information. And what kind of content do we create that can support both the very like minute, detail-oriented, like exclusive community, as well as the open space mentality, where we continuously lead this digital breadcrumb trail to all parts of our .com or a person that they can actually speak to, whatever it is they need at that time, we're finding it. We're acting as their navigator. So that is incredibly important. So we're establishing, even though it sounds like, you know, this is becoming more Skynet in some ways, becoming more aware of what is out there is helping us become more human in our approach to the content that we're creating and the way that we are engaging. So with that being said, even though we want consistent tone and voice, I'm not looking to mirror or mimic one successful community and make sure that everybody else, you know, has the exact same look and feel. That wouldn't do anybody any good. Diversity is what makes our communities, both broader and you know, exclusive, it makes them more rich. It makes them more valuable. I'm not out there as well, you know, promoting governance for well-manicured lawns, making sure I'm not a traffic cop. I don't have time to be a traffic cop. I don't have the team or the resources to be a traffic cop. But when we know that people are accountable, across the organization, and when we've given our external community what we call a community pact, we've told them and been very transparent, here's what we've put in place for your safety, our safety. This is how we can have a conversation. You can either choose to enter this new type of social contract or you don't. It's not a black and white world. We have to have shades of experience and shades of engagement that are going to push beyond any type of governance that we have in place. But having the scaffolding right there at the very beginning helps us to become more reactive, or less reactive, more proactive, but we can react in a timely manner. So, ultimate goal would be to package these experiences, not a customer journey, but how do we understand and recognize the trends and behaviors of how people get to where they want to go in a faster way, whether it's with a community management community manager guiding them, or a person within the community guiding them. This is a goal that is hopefully in the next year or two. And we know that as soon as you put together, I really hate customer journeys. As soon as you put together a customer journey, your customer member is going to hack it and create a new one. So the way that I like these package experiences is that it's very driven by the community, and it is built the same way that our governance materials are, in which that it ebbs and flows with what is put into it. It's evaluated every so often, and it's really driven by the community. This is everything that I've discussed today, the different lenses, and I'm happy to address them online if you would like to contact me individually and how this, you know, actually works or doesn't work. I'm happy to tell about the failures as well, because I think we learn a lot from those. So with that, I'll take any questions. Yes?
But at the same time, if someone does post something you know, with your company? Like, for example, I'm in building, and if we have an internal website and external, and sometimes internally they might forget, or it says confidential only that we want a project, mm-hmm. and then someone's like, can't wait to, you know, build at Cleveland Indians, and then they get upset. So then I feel like I am kind of pulled into it and re-put out the tools and the training that we had. Just wondering if you ever have that or what you do.
Yes. Anytime my CEO gets in front and does one of his quarterly management meetings, somebody ultimately forgets or is new to the company. I think in our space, after a while, you get to know, you can see the gross errors in judgment, right? Versus those that, you know, are, you know, very innocent in nature. So in that particular instance, we see our role as an educator. So we're gonna go out there, you know, we go to that person, you know, we don't slap them on their hand. We get them, hey, by the way, did you see this? You know, here's part of the training. This is a good example of what we wouldn't put out there. But what if you wanted to take that down and put that up with something like this or whatever? We've also started to build more, we've started to get really deep into our employee advocacy programs. So anticipating that those things are going to happen, and so giving them the resources or the content that they can just plug and play, like through Social Chorus or other different avenues where it's already in a compliant environment, that has really helped scale down those types of issues.
You mentioned how we're in a political season. Does Aetna ever make any comments on your social feed about, like, because I know politics can be very doesn't really necessarily bring people together, which is what you're trying to do. So how do you kind of navigate that?
CEO.
Okay.
So our CEO is not managed by anybody on our team, anybody on the communications team. Mark Bernalini is very vocal online, and he speaks his mind and what his vision and strategy is, not just for our company, but for the entire industry as a whole. And if there are any comments to be made in that environment, it will come from Mark. We try to stay as neutral as possible. If it is something that impacts the entire industry and it's more of like getting down to a member education, like how does this affect you as the member, then that's where we talk, you know, specific content, but not to wade into political. That wouldn't be of service to anyone, at least not the people that follow us.
Maybe too broad a question to ask right before lunch, but I'm thinking about my own experience in working with healthcare companies and their website. What kind of research started this process in you saying, all right, there are certain constituencies or stakeholders we need to serve. What do we want this city to do? I mean, obviously you want it to be a community. You talked really nicely about the things that you're building there. But I guess what started the process? Was it, gosh, you came in and it was messy?
Well, I came into it as this is going to make social and community better, not that I'm going to change the entire digital environment, because there are way too many people that are adding to that pie. So it's mainly become part of our team's roadshow. So getting more and more people involved and changing it where we can, and being more thoughtful about anything that is being that is newly introduced. So working on the governance that was put in place by Social, we put together a digital governance committee that governs, you know, the things that are much broader. So now they've mimicked what works so well in the social environment, so that we can all be representatives and have these conversations and be able to say, okay, this would or wouldn't work, or now that I know that, I can go separately to this group and we can, you know, expand the idea, we can figure out how it's going to scale outwards. It's not like this mass, like, rebrand or strategy that is trickling throughout the entire company all at the same time. It is very, very organic.
I was actually just kind of browsing through your Facebook feed, and I noticed that you guys have a lot, and I'm sure every insurance company has the same problem with people complaining, you know, X, Y, and Z isn't covered, you know, they're really angry, and I think you guys are doing a great job with, you know, trying to take those offline, but it seems like people just keep posting them. Do you ever get pushback internally with, like, why are we even doing this Facebook page? It's just, you know, like, I've had this kind of problem internally as well with negative comments, and people just get frustrated. You know, how do you kind of combat that, like, internally and externally? Like, I think I see the same person replying to every single post, like...
Yes, we have those. Well, I get that question almost on a daily basis sometimes, especially this season. We're entering open enrollment season. Woohoo, no sleep. But, you know, it really comes down to taking away the channel doesn't solve the problem. There are root issues that either we as a company need to solve, or it needs to be solved for by the entire industry. And we can do where we can to educate. But you wouldn't ignore the company, we wouldn't ignore the phone ringing off the hook. That's why we have all of these agents that are there answering the phone. It is absolutely no different. So just by taking away the channel doesn't take away the conversation. If anything, we've shown that over time, we are able to decrease the amount of questions or complaints in certain areas because we are answering them or giving them other resources in which they can answer on their own, or they don't have to wait on hold, or don't necessarily require a person talking to them, or can be solved in the public environment. And then there are some things that we just can't answer because of an individual basis. That's not because of our rules and governance, but because that is something in place as a regulated industry, and certain information that you don't want shared. So it's this constant balance of being an educator as well as also being an advocate for how channels are changing and how you have to take the good and the bad with the ugly, unfortunately. All right, thank you very much, I appreciate it.